It wasn't too long ago, quite recently, that a talk show host, Glenn Beck, urged churches who had websites or ministers who used the phrase social justice to run from those churches. So my title is Dear Mr. Beck, or the gospel is social justice. Now, you are a very wealthy man, Mr. Beck, since you have expressed an interest in religious life and in Christians specifically. I think you should be warned then, Jesus had some harsh things to say to the rich. And just to be fair to Jesus, let's remember that Nazism and communism came some 1900 years after Christ, so it would be very difficult to label him a Nazi or a communist, or a Democrat or a Republican, or a conservative or liberal. These labels have little or no meaning when we talk about the Christ. But this is what he apparently said to the wealthy. It is easier for a camel to go through the eye of a needle than for a rich man to enter the kingdom of God. Read literally or poetically, I'd say you have your work cut out for you. I'm just saying. But I don't want to pick on you, sir. The truth is, when it comes to the earth as a whole, great swaths of people live on a dollar a day on this planet. And that being the case, some churches preach social justice and hold their people and nation accountable for their wealth. And they proclaim Jesus' clear compassion and concern for the poor, the marginal, the sick, and the dispossessed. In a sentence, Glenn, there really is no such thing as a gospel of Jesus Christ without social justice. Now that phrase, social justice, is not a bad one, but the biblical term is shalom. Shalom, the peace and well-being of all people, is a concern of the Almighty. Anyone who has paid even a little attention in Sunday school or in worship would know that the foundational story in salvation history, as it is explained in the Bible, is the liberation of slaves from the oppression of Egypt and its pharaohs. The former spokesperson of the NRA, Charlton Heston, knew that. He played the role of Moses, after all. Is it fair to say, or is it accurate to say, that liberating slaves from slave owners and taskmasters is an illustration of social justice? You betcha.
Now, Jim, show this gentleman how you can dance and sing.
That's my attitude towards the Western powers. If you want to say there's no rules, fine. Don't go crying for your money when that comes.
America today finds herself in a unique situation. She's the only country in history in a position to become involved in a bloodless revolution.
If America does not respond creatively to the challenge to banish racism, some future historian will have to say that a great civilization died because it lacked the soul and commitment to make justice a reality for all men.
When the system doesn't work for the majority of the people, you gotta change the system. Da-da-da-da.
Hello, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Byron Meredith, and welcome to another episode of the Class War Battlefield Podcast. As you can tell by the opening of this podcast, today's topic is obviously going to be about social justice. It's a topic that I didn't actually know that I was going to be talking about, but In the segment that you're about to hear, a segment which I recorded independently of this one, something that I'm probably going to continue doing because the ideas seem to come out more naturally and easily. But in the segment that you're about to hear, you're going to hear me talk about inventions and something that I think the church should be doing in its capacity to influence revolutionary change. Now, in this introduction, I want to definitely say to you that I think this is the first true podcast where I actually talk about revolutionary change. And I'm not talking violent revolutionary change, but where at the heart of this podcast is the concept of social revolutionary change. And it was only when I completed this segment, which is about 30 minutes long, did I even think that liberation theology and social justice had really influenced it. Now, you're going to hear me reference it, so you may find this hard to believe, but my whole idea, the concept behind it, was only to invoke, or not invoke, but encourage a new way of thinking among clergymen and women. But ultimately, and you see this in the second portion, or the second half of the segment, I recognized just exactly what I was talking about, and the importance of the call to social revolution. It is my belief that one way or another, there will be a social revolution in this nation. Now, the social revolution can be either negative or positive. For years, people like Alex Jones, and I never thought that I would say this, have been, in some aspects, completely right. They've been talking about the coming police state. There's been many people within the black community who have been asking and begging white Americans since basically what people consider the end of the civil rights era, you know, when Martin Luther King was killed, to recognize that the terror that's being implemented in the inner cities will only expand outward. And I think with some of the moves that Obama has made in the last year, we see that that expansion is quickening. So, there is going to be a social revolution in this nation. Now, it could be in the form of a police state, and that is a sort of social revolution. It's a frightening one, but it is one nonetheless. Or, and I believe firmly that God is, that God, the living God, as Martin Luther King would say, is in favor of the second option. No matter how hard and difficult it is to get us there, but or we will have a social revolution which will throw off the shackles of Egypt, of the pharaohs, and will free us ultimately. But in order to do that, we have to be in a better position than we are in now. And we have really cut ourselves off from our divine inspiration, whether you want to call that divine inspiration morals or consciousness or Buddhism, Hinduism, Christianity, Islam, or what have you, even Wiccanism. We have not put together the infrastructure necessary to create a spiritually more fulfilling life. And I think people have ran from this concept because they believe all money corrupts. But spiritual currency is vastly different than the currency in which we use today, which is transitory and only exists for materialists' purposes. And, you know, people often talk about the coming of a new age. What they fail to realize is collectivism, which we have really embraced, will have to come to an end in order for this new era to come about. And we are in no way ready to do that. We are in no way to ready to live spiritually fulfilling lives. And that could mean also living conscious lives too, for my atheist friends out there. Either way, we're just not ready. And so when I put this segment together, I wanted to propose the first tool that could help us start preparing for that. And, you know, make no bones about it, we're going to have to prepare rather rapidly. It's not a question of if social revolution will take place, it's when and how. The world is changing. And particularly on an environmental level, the world will force us to change the way that we live. Economically, even certain nations are saying the United States has to change the way that it lives. China, in one of its state-owned newspapers a couple weeks ago, actually ran an article, which, you know, I was alerted to this in one of the podcasts that I listened to. But they actually ran an article saying the problem with the United States is they don't know how to live within their means. And they will have to be forced to do that. The world is really getting sick of our nation. So we either can choose to change the way we live, or the world can impose it on us. And trust me when I tell you, if the world imposes it on us, the United States may cease to exist. It may cease to exist. So, we have a choice. We have a real choice to make, and we only have a couple years to do it. I'm going to take a break right now. Then after the break, I'm going to play that segment, and the podcast will actually end without an introduction from me, okay? You can always contact me at Clash War Battlefield Podcast at live.com. Please do. Also find our podcasts exclusively at radioforall.net. Please support this project, ladies and gentlemen. This is an important project. Brothers and packs done, plus everybody's high, too doped up to ask why. Watching our own downfall, witness the end. It's like we don't believe in God, cause we living in sin. I asked my homie on the block why he strapped, he laughed, pointed his pistol as the cop called, passed the blast. It's just another murder, nobody mourns no more. My teardrops getting bigger, but can't figure what I'm crying for. Is it the miniature caskets, little babies, victims of a straight from drug dealers gone crazy? Maybe it's just the drugs, visions of how the block was. Crack came and it was strange how it rocked us. Perhaps the underlying facts they hide explain genocide. It's when we ride on our own kind. What is it we all fear? Reflections in the mirror, we can't escape fate. The end is getting nearer, who do you believe in? I put my faith in God, blessed and still breathing. And even though it's hard, that's who I believe in. Before I'm leaving, I'm asking the grieving. Who do you believe in? Who do you believe in? I put my faith in God, blessed and still breathing. And even though it's hard, that's who I believe in. Before I'm leaving, I'm asking the grieving. Who do you believe? Can't close my eyes,
cause all I see is terror. I hate the man in the mirror, cause his reflection makes the pain turn realer. Times of Armageddon, murdering mass amounts in a society where only getting the cash counts. I started out as a beginner, into the criminal lifestyle, became a sinner. I make my money and vacate, evade prison. Went from the chosen one to outcast, unforgiven. And all the Hennessy and VK high. The pain I feel inside, you know, it's like I'm living just to die. Fall on my knees and beg for mercy, not knowing if I'm worthy. Living life thinking no man can hurt me, so I'm asking before I lay me down to sleep. Before you judge me, look at all the shit you did to me. My misery, I rose up from the slums, made it out the flames in my search for fame. Will I change? And I'm asking, who do you believe in? I put my faith in God, blessed and still breathing. And even though it's
a word to my Christian brothers and sisters. I found myself recently being approached by numbers of people asking me if I have given over my life to Jesus Christ. While I can say no in the traditional sense, I have not given my life over to Jesus Christ. I have indeed returned to who I was as a child and embraced the man as he stood, of love, kinship, compassion, and intellectualism, because the man was quite intelligent. Furthermore, I am able to say to those people, I have aligned myself and made a commitment, a deeper commitment, to be the man who I know I can be, both for my immediate family, and that doesn't only include blood relatives, and for society in general. I can tell them that. But I can also tell them that as I have opened my heart to Jesus and accepted him in the pure love that I once had for him until being, should I say, exposed to the dogmatic whimsy of the gospel that passes for true church intellectualism these days. An intellectualism that is devoid of character in the world that we live. But as I've done that, I have found myself more open and ready to accept other great messengers and messiahs too. I've always been an admirer of the Buddha and Buddhism in general. Of Hinduism, of, yes, Wiccanism, the study of herbs, particularly with that religion, and the ability to bless and purify the air with herbs. All of this might be a little much for my church friends, but that is not why I am making this podcast today. It's just kind of to give them a little bit of view who I am. I am a spiritualist. I've said it before. And I'm not dropping that title. I believe one can be a spiritualist and embrace the compassion and depth of Jesus Christ, along with the dedication and peace of Muhammad, and the motivation of the Buddha. Of course, the nonviolence of King and Gandhi, and the empirical and humanist centerpieces of atheism. One can do all of that through spiritualism. And indeed, I would say that one of the greater tragedies of atheism is that there seems to be, with most of them, a complete denial of spiritual relevance, which creates a void that doesn't allow them to make thorough connections between what looks like abstract and unconnected issues. But there is. You just have to look at it without being cynical to spiritualism. Anyway, with the introduction out the way, what I'd like to talk to my Christian friends about is the egotism. The egotism that is running rampant in the church right now. And that egotism, to me, leads those who believe that we are in the end times to sit on their hands instead of saying we can create real technologically based and socially revolutionary solutions to the problems that we are facing. Now, this may seem odd to you. Well, let me explain it. You have to split it up into a couple of parts. The egotism that I'm speaking of is the kind of I told you so mannerism which so many churches who are preaching the Revelation end time gospel, you know, periodically, but it's still there, attitude, where they say, look, we've been telling you for, you know, 400 or 500 years that this was going to indeed happen. The problem is, what they fail to realize is, they've been telling us for 400 or 500 years. So it becomes kind of like back noise. The church, in many aspects, they only saw their own time period, which, you know, it's understandable because they live in their own time period. But because they only saw their own time period, because they didn't see the depth of the larger picture that was surrounding them, they couldn't see where we were heading, not just where we were. I think a lot of people started to ignore them. And the very few who didn't often found their hopes let down because, hey, look, the end times didn't come. Why should I believe God or his messengers? Well, today I don't think that we can deny that we may indeed be in the end times. Now, I'm not talking about just in the sense of the Bible. Look around us. We have the capacity to kill this planet with war weapons. What, 10 times over, 12 times over, something like that? Our environment is in meltdown right now, and we seem to be ignorant about it, particularly in the West. We keep carrying on like nothing is happening. While the church is, especially progressive churches, they are rightfully saying, look at the signs. We cannot avoid the signs now. The signs are here. We're in the end times. The planet will be destroyed one way or another if we don't radically change the way that we are doing things. Here's the only problem. We are not radically changing the way that we are talking about our planet and what needs to be happening in our society. Hence, this egotism, this I told you so mechanism, isn't leading to true revolutionary concepts that will actually change the way our society is heading. Indeed, we're still trying to do the same things that we were doing before. Pray to God. Pray that our leaders follow God. Pray that the leaders listen to us. Pray that the leaders do, you know, our bidding and our will, which is kind of contradictory if you think about it. How could they do our will and God's will at the same time? But that's for another day, I suppose. I suppose if our wills are lined up with God's, then it's a different story. But what we fail to see is it is precisely because we are able to line our wills up with God that we need to talk about more social revolutionary solutions. Nothing is stopping us from doing that. The church has not taken the leadership that it keeps saying that it's taking. For instance, just about every church has an outreach program where they're feeding the homeless, where they're clothing the clotheless, where they're trying to house the homeless in some way or another. And I believe there's many churches, I know actually of a few of them, who are doing some incredibly advanced work with actually trying to get people houses, you know, whether it is, you know, mortgages or trying to get them jobs or what have you. But there's, I haven't seen a church yet that's actually went back to the roots of liberation theology. And maybe that's because, you know, those churches aren't active on the internet or what have you, but churches who understand that the true nature of liberation theology is social revolution. We are not going to solve the problems of the coming age by continuing to do what we've done for the last 60 years. I am now convinced more than ever that Martin Luther King and the SCLC, at least in the beginning, that was really truthfully the last ditch effort to try to save the soul of America before we had to start going through a period of tribulation, if you would, where we were faced with not annihilation, but the pretense to annihilation. And I don't think it's hard to make that argument. I mean, look at where our society is. We are in complete destruction mode. And yet people don't want to face that reality. They don't want to. They just do not want to. So what am I talking about when I say social revolutionary solutions? There is nothing stopping people from creating new inventions that will bring in and usher in a new sense of sustainable economics and a new sense of independence from a dying order and a dying system. Indeed, if we would, instead of giving our willpower up, we would align it with God, I think you would see a huge fusion of inventions that would move us in that direction. We have forgotten just how innovative we as a species are. We have. And the churches who could be leading us on this revolution have not talked about it. They haven't taken the initiative. Why? I don't know. Maybe they don't believe it's their task or their job to do it. But if we're to save the soul of our society, then yes, it is their task to do it. In fact, conservative churches, these far right-wing churches, seem to take it as part of their task more so than left-wing churches do. Right-wing churches preach a gospel that says, yes, align yourself with God and God will give you the ideas to make yourself rich. Well, why then is there not a backlash within the church community saying, no, forget about financial riches. Yes, they're great. But people, how about just social riches? How about riches that help your community and surrounding communities? How about that? I know that there are hundreds of thousands of inventors sitting in church pews. How do I know this? Because the innovative spirit that helped America was not cultivated. I'll say it again, it was not cultivated in a boardroom. The reason why the gospel of America has been innovation, and the reason why that sells so well, is because it is true. And indeed, some of the greatest inventions came from individuals who did not seemingly have the intelligence to do so. Some of them were slaves. Many of them were slaves, actually. Many of them were considered uneducated. And yet, they had persevered with their own education, true education. And a lot of these individuals were very spiritual. We would say back in those days they were very religious. But they had a connection to the divine that obviously gave them knowledge that allowed them to invent. Now, I've talked to friends in my little community, and I've looked at them and I've said, you're an inventor. I could see it. I can see it. We have inventors that don't even know they're inventors for one reason or another. And a lot of them are in the church. A lot of them are in the church. We are going to have to change dramatically the way that we live. And we're going to need these inventors. We're going to need them. We are going to have to start building our communities, not only locally and regionally, but also reestablishing a national social dialogue that allows us to reconnect into the true heart of the soul of America. And that soul has to be elevated now. It has to be conscious. We can no longer do what we've been doing. It just, pardon me, it's just undoable. Now I'm hoping a few clergymen end up listening to this. I really do. And I'd like to know what you think. I would really like to know what you think. Because this is something that I've thought about before, not in so much detail or depth, but it's something that I'm becoming passionate about. As I've turned over my life to God, and I have, and as I've reestablished that marvelous childlike connection I had to Jesus Christ, and in doing so, of course, opened up to Muhammad and Buddha and King, Gandhi, Mother Teresa, and more. My life is becoming more in focus. And ideas that I've had that I can definitely tell you will come into existence in the next 10 years I now understand why I've had them, and to what extent they can help people. I would ask that any Christian out there do the same for me. Examine your life. Examine the thoughts you've had. Examine the ideas that you've had. You know, the number of people that I've met, it's only been a few, may I say, but I know if I'm meeting a few around here, then there has to be millions of them across the country. The number of people I've met who've said to me, I had an idea several years ago that ended up now on TV. I just look at them and I say, why didn't you follow it up? Nah, I just thought it was an idea. Or it didn't seem important. It's time that we stop doing that. I once read that ideas are neither good nor bad. It just depends on who acts on them first. So, if a person living in abstract poverty, abject poverty, excuse me, comes up with the idea of, I don't know, let's say an internal combustible engine that does not use gasoline, and the person gets together with his or her community to build this thing, and then decides instead of marketing it and giving it to like Toyota or something, they decide to establish a company and build it regionally. And then start buying up other companies to do, to help, you know, put it onto the market. Then uses that money as a tool to fund anti-poverty legislation and organizations that really get to the root of poverty. They're obviously using it for good. However, if they didn't act on it, you know, it's that idea doesn't go away. It lingers. It's an energy form. And someone else plucks it out who works for Toyota. And they decide, we can use part of this to create a better miles per gallon of our old combustible engine. But we have significant holdings with gasoline companies. So we want gasoline to still be the main fuel. So they put the rest of it up. And it's forgotten about. Well, now they've just made hundreds of millions, maybe billions, actually probably billions of dollars from this idea. And yet the social consequence far outweighs, or the social negative consequence, because I'm learning that the word consequence is not necessarily a negative, but the social negative consequences far outweigh the positive ones. We need to change that. We are going to need to create a national, I would say a national prayer organization. Doesn't necessarily have to be a prayer organization, but a national organization for divine invention. How do you like that one? Naughty. A national organization for divine inventions. And from that organization, create a venture fund. I won't call it venture capitalism, because capitalism is a dying philosophy, and it's a false concept. But a venture fund to build the organizations necessary to bring these inventions to reality. It's going to have to happen. If we are truthfully to save the soul of America, we are going to have to do this as part of that process. And we are going to have to take inventions and ask for inventions that create a sustainable economic and environmental model that feeds first the local community and then second the regional community and then third, I was going to say final, but it's not really final, third, the national community before finally, and this is the fourth one, the international community. This will ultimately lead to what would be considered a lower standard of economic living. Stress that, economic living. But I believe it will result in a higher standard of spiritual and communal living. One that will make people actually happy. I want to thank you for listening. I would like to ask you, the listener, to take this podcast and send it to your Christian brothers and sisters and to your religious brothers and sisters and ask them to comment on it. Please, take this podcast, burn it on CDs, give it to your local clergy personnel, and let them know. I'm really looking for information from them. How many of them would be interested in doing something like the National Organization for Divine Inventions? I mean, I really believe that we need to start changing how we're using this divinity so that we can create a spiritual revolution in this nation. And just for a quick FYI, it will not be just one for Christianity. Consciousness dictates us to accept others who may not follow the same path that we do to God, but ultimately they all do lead to God. As long as a person is moral and consciously aware, God is in their heart. But it's that conscious awareness that is the key. Now, anyone with any questions, concerns, or opinions, and remember, if you'd like to send me an audio file, I'm trying to actually get to a point where I can take down phone messages too and play them. But if you'd like to send me an audio file, you can send it to classwarbattlefieldpodcast@live.com. You can follow me on Twitter, CW Battlefield, that's my handle, or peaceful_SOJOUR. That's my other handle. That's my personal one, actually. Again, thank you for listening. My name is Brian Miradis. Like I always tell you, stay strong in the struggle. And remember, we are soldiers in a righteous, righteous, righteous anti-war movement. You didn't think I was going there, did you? Peace. Where a government lies to a people, and a country is drifting to war. There's a shadow on the faces of the men who sent the guns to the wars that are fought in places where their business interest runs. On the radio, talk shows, and the TV, you hear one thing again and again. How the USA stands for freedom, and we come to the aid of a friend. But who are the ones that we call our friends? These governments killing their own, or the people who find they can't take anymore, and they pick up a gun or a brick or a stone. And there are lies in the balance.